This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Are you driving your car or doing laundry right now? Podcasts go best when they're bundled with another activity. Like Progressive home and auto policies, they're best when they're bundled too. Having these two policies together makes insurance easier and could help you save. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save nearly $800 on average. Quote a home and car bundle today at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $793 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2021 and May 2022. Potential savings will vary.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
For years, I've been devouring a series of books about an ex-military cop named Jack Reacher. Huge, hard-nosed, a quiet stranger who wanders into town and finds trouble inevitably. And it's been a lot to devour because there are now 23 Jack Reacher novels, including an advance copy I just scored of the next one. The Reacher books have sold more than 100 million copies in 40-plus languages, and there's even a film franchise starring Tom Cruise. This all-American tough guy is the creation of one Lee Child. Child never served in the Army. He doesn't seem prone to beating up anyone. He's not even American. Lee Child was born in England. He was named James Grant. He graduated law school before embarking on a 20-year career in television, all before beginning his hugely successful career as a novelist. Lee Child, is an absolute delight to have you here. You've made so many summers come alive for me reading you. So I'm full of questions, and naturally I want to ask you about the way this all began. You were working as an executive in 1995, and you got fired and decided, to hell with it, I'm going to work for myself and become a superstar writer of thrillers.
Well, it wasn't quite that linear. I was a television director and very happy where I was. It was in Britain, during what in retrospect looks like a golden age of drama is well remembered. I mean, my company did Jewel in the Crown, Brideshead Revisited, Prime Suspect, just some really terrific shows. But it was also a fabulous news station, documentary station. It was really the height of the height. And then broadcasting in Britain, like I think everywhere in the world, got shook up, particularly by Rupert Murdoch's influence, and the whole thing started to fall apart.
You lost your job because of Rupert Murdoch?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, Rupert Murdoch wanted to bring his satellite service to Britain, and in order to do that, he needed to attack and weaken the terrestrial services, the BBC and the independent broadcasters. And it was a pretty transparent deal with the Thatcher government. You know, you let me do this, help me out a little bit, and I will support you in my papers and on the air.
Why did you, and you were named Jim Grant still then, why did you get fired?
Because I was 39 years old, an expensive veteran with a big salary and benefits, a pension, and all that kind of thing. And they discovered that they could get recent graduates to do the work for a quarter of the price.
So now, what made you believe that you could walk out the door, sit down, change your name, and become a great writer of thrillers?
Well, I didn't necessarily believe it. I just thought that at that age, at that stage of your life, this is probably the last chance to try something new, to make a big break. I did not want to leave the world of entertainment. I'm just totally in love with that idea. I mean, you very kindly mentioned you read my book and enjoy it. And I just absolutely love that transaction, that I can do something that somebody else is going to enjoy. And television satisfied that for a long time. But when I left television, I wanted to stay in that world, basically. So the question was, how can I stay? What can I do that will supply me with the same feeling?
So you did a particular thing, not just one, a series of particularities. First of all, you invented Jack Reacher and stuck with him. He's an American. You're not. He's a complete loner. Malcolm Gladwell and others have compared him to a kind of cowboy. It's like the form of a Western, a man who wanders into a town, in his case, hitchhikes in. No change of clothes. His only possession is a toothbrush. He senses trouble and complications begin.
Yeah.
Former military policeman. So how did you invent him? Why is he an American?
Well, it was a whole batch of reasons that happily all pointed in the same direction. First of all, you know, really the hardest thing about being a writer, or I suppose an artist of any kind, is that you have to believe several different things, some of which are contradictory, but you have to believe them all 100%, completely wholeheartedly. And of course, I believe that this is an art, it's a craft, it's a joy, it's creative, all that good stuff. But it's also a job, it's a business. And so I had a vague eye on the business side of it, which was that so many other people, in fact, everybody else that was writing a series was writing essentially a soap opera with a fixed location. It would either be location-based or employment-based or both. And the hero would have probably colleagues and a superior he didn't like and subordinates that were difficult. He would have possibly a partner, an apartment, a favorite bar, a favorite restaurant, neighbors, the whole thing. The classic soap opera, which I'm in no way denigrating. I worked in television. I made my living on soap operas for nearly two decades. They're incredibly powerful and actually quite sophisticated form of narrative. But everybody was doing it. So I thought, well, let's not do that. Let's do the anti-soap opera.
Strip it down.
Yeah, where there's only one character. There's no repertory cast surrounding him. There's one character. There's no location. He can be anywhere. He has no job, so he can do anything. So it was really a study in loneliness, alienation in a way. And that had to be in America because Malcolm Gladwell talks about cowboys. Well, yeah, that's fine, but where did cowboys come from? The cowboy myth is essentially a development of a medieval myth from Europe, the knight errant.
Knight, yeah.
The knight who has somehow transgressed against the court and has been banished. Same thing in Japan, Japanese culture, the ronin, exactly the same thing. A samurai who's been disowned by his master and sentenced to wander the land doing good deeds. So it's really that tradition, and you can't do that in Britain. Britain is too small. It is too densely populated. There are no empty areas. There's no mystery about it. America has the frontier feel.
Wandering into the Cotswolds wouldn't work in the same way as Nebraska.
It totally wouldn't, because everybody in the Cotswolds knows your business immediately, and everybody knows everything. There's no possibility of hidden secrets. It has to be the wide open spaces.
Now, I can't believe you write the way you've described this. You sit down every year at September 1st. You don't sit down with an outline. You don't do research, even though some of your novels seem to indicate, a knowledge of opioids or a knowledge of this of place. And then you just start and off you go. That's a very strange way to write any kind of novel, much less...
It is.
But I would have thought a Jack Reacher novel would be pretty heavily plotted and you'd have charts on the wall.
Absolutely not. Nothing on the wall. And, it's summertime now and acutely aware that September the 1st is approaching. And I'm thinking, I have zero idea.
How do you feel about that? Is it impending doom or
pleasure?
Yeah,
I mean, half my mind is impending doom. You know, the gas tank is empty. Finally, I've been found out. Finally, it's all going to fall apart. And then I think, well, wait a minute, you felt like that for the last 20 books. And so you've managed them before, you can manage this one. And for me, it's always about the story. And I want the story to be organic, naturally unfolding. And I feel that if I wrote an outline, it would be a rather artificial structure. I'd be forcing the story into an artificial route that it probably didn't want to take. So I just start in the beginning and I hope to get a good first sentence or a good first paragraph, and then I think, well, all right, now what happens? What happens now?
Do you ever go 75 pages in and it's a bust and you have to start again?
Never.
How is that possible?
Two reasons. First of all, that would be very inefficient. It would drive me mad to do that. And I can usually tell before about seven words if I'm heading down a bad track. I can tell pretty early, and so I sometimes delete seven words, but that hurts quite a lot, I'll tell you. But it's really about one thing leads from another in a very organic way. For instance, the new book, Past Tense, I wrote the first sentence, and there were or the first paragraph anyway. And there were two things in it. One I had mentioned, Maine. Reacher has to start from somewhere. So he's in Maine for the summer. Now he's planning to head south for the winter.
And he gets to New Hampshire.
Right. He only gets as far as New Hampshire, but he's planning to go all the way south to Southern California. Like the birds migrate. And I have a pretty mellifluous sentence there in the beginning about the migration of birds, some typical species. And I just wrote that thinking, okay, this is a good place to start. And then immediately, first of all, the bird watching. Well, years ago in one of the books, it was mentioned that Reacher's father was a bird watcher, because I wanted the contrast between a pretty vicious marine soldier and his hobby, which was bird watching. I found that an interesting contrast. So in the back of my mind, okay, why have I started this with a reference to birds? Maybe this book ought to be about Reacher's father. You know, I start on September 1st because that's the anniversary of when I started the very first book. So it's a sentimental day to start. I start on the 1st of September and work every available day until the book is finished, which is usually around the next March because a lot of other things get in the way.
Oh, you do leave your desk. You'll leave town.
I've got family stuff. They want to do Christmas and all those kind of things.
It's horrible, isn't it?
Yeah. You know, they drag you away.
Now, this is one of the most amazing things. At a certain point, I think you were writing Make Me. An English academic named Andy Martin sat there with you in your study and watched you write a novel.
Yeah, he was
30 cups of coffee a day, like Balzac.
Yeah, possibly more. I think my record is mid-30s. Mugs of coffee, not just little cups. You know, let's get serious about this.
That's impressive. You have an impressive stomach.
Yeah, Andy was... It happened very short notice. He's a rather freewheeling academic from Cambridge University, and literally days before I started that novel, he came up with that idea. And probably if I'd had longer to think about it, I would have said no. But because time was short, it was my 20th book, I just thought, let's do something different. And to a certain extent, I wanted to have it on record, not for me personally necessarily, but for all of us in this genre, because there is a lot of cheap talk about how it's somehow easy to write these books, that there are various terms used, crank them out and so on, which is actually very much the opposite of the truth.
But even the way you describe it, it sounds easy. You sit down on September 1st, you don't write a second or third or 50th draft. No outline. So what is the difficulty? Describe that.
Well, really the difficulty is with a readership the size of a successful genre writer's readership.
What is this? Kill me. Go ahead and kill me. What is the scale of your readership?
Well, millions of people, you know, globally around the world, a Reacher book sells every 9 seconds. So there's a lot of people reading them. And you cannot look at that as a monolithic mass because with an audience that size, they're very striated. They're very different. At the center, you've got the expert readers who just read all the time, like Malcolm Gladwell. You know, mine is not the only book that he reads that week, obviously. He reads constantly. So do a lot of people, and they have to be satisfied. Mm. But on the very far edges of the audience are the people that read one book a year on their vacation, on the beach. That's all they will read. And you've got to satisfy both those readers and everybody in between.
And you feel them out there. You feel that immense audience.
Yeah, because you meet them. You know, you meet the extremely unlikely people that are fans. And then you meet people who are clearly the one book a year person. And touchingly, their biggest compliment that they can pay you is they will say, I loved your book. I finished it. Which
wow.
is a huge achievement. They feel that it's their achievement.
It's an unusual act.
Yeah, they finished a book. They're very satisfied. They're happy with themselves. And, of course, they're happy with the book because the book has aided them to do that. And how do you do that? The real skill, and I think the skill that Andy Martin observed day to day, is the rhythms of the book. The book has got to be a locomotive that drives people through without being noticeably such.
Finally, we'll... Jack Reacher ever leave us or leave you?
I'm fascinated with the whole showbiz thing of leave them wanting more. Don't be the embarrassing guy that sticks around two seasons too long. We see that all the time in, you know, shows on television We see it with athletes. You've got to pick your time to go. And I do not want Richard to become an embarrassing old character that's bought kind of out of habit or sentimentality.
So you might leave him behind and write about someone or something else?
No, I would leave him behind and retire completely. Do not forget, I'm from Europe. I have no work ethic. Retirement is a phase of life that I'm keenly looking forward to.
Are you?
Yeah.
Would you do on September 1st?
Read. That's the only thing I resent about writing is the time it takes away from reading. That I would, literally, I've got rooms full of books just stacking up, just waiting to be read.
What's the biggest masterpiece that's just sitting there staring at you and saying, you have not read me?
I've never read Jane Austen, which is shocking for an English person. But the Russians of the 19th century, maybe Flaubert, stuff like that. And then, of course, the fabulous thing about books is you don't know what the classics are. There's something sitting there in my living room right now that could be the best read of my life. And I don't know what it is yet because I haven't tried it.
Well, Lee Child, I'm incredibly grateful to you, but don't leave Jack Reacher too soon, okay?
I honestly...
You can squeeze in Jane Austen somehow.
I could probably read her in the evenings after I finished writing Reacher, but that would be quite a contrast.
Lee Child, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Lee Child's next book, Past Tense, is due out in November. And if that seems too far off, I'll remind you that there are 22 other Jack Reacher novels waiting for you right now.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them. Because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.